Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series by VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott, the IOA Run the City 5K, the best ever office party coming to San Diego on Thursday night, June 15th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we're about to send out 2,000 grants totaling $3 million to buy the equipment challenged athletes need to stay in the game of life through sport. And definitely check us out on Babbittville.com and on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, longtime friend of the show, two-time Ironman world champion, one of the true legends of the sport of triathlon, Mr. Chris McCormick. Macca, how the heck are you?
Good, Bob. How are you?
I am wonderful.
Long way away.
Where are you at right now? I know you're every time I check, you're in Australia, you're in Laguna Phuket. What part of the world are you in?
We're in Phuket, so we're still in Asia. We're enjoying it over here as a family. It's a lovely part of the world. We're in Phuket.
So the kids are going to school there?
I have one at boarding school in Sydney, my oldest, Talia.
Yeah.
She's going back for horse riding, and my other two are here. They don't want to leave. For them, Phuket is home. They can't imagine living anywhere else, which will make the transition back to Australia very difficult.
So speaking of transition, you raced for a ton of years as a professional triathlete. When you got to the point where you knew you couldn't be at the top end of the sport and it was time to move on, you're still a young guy. People don't quite understand. So what did you think at first that you were going to do in the rest part of your life, rest part of your career?
Well, I think, you sort of get to that transitional period in life. I think I was sitting there with the family, my girls were growing up, and you start looking around. And when you start looking around as an athlete instead of looking forward, you start to realize you need to start assessing what you're going to do when it's all over. And I was in a good position because I'd won that Ironman in 2010, which set me up with some good endorsement deals for quite a long period of time. And so I started making that transition across, and that opportunity presented itself in Thailand in 2013, and we're looking at building a big international school and sports center here, and I came across, and it was really an initiation of fire. But you start to realize that the transition to business and sport is very, very similar. It's a similar mindset, and I think as triathletes we're hardworking individuals, and I've really enjoyed it. I think it was the perfect timing for me. I was still dabbling in the sport at a professional level, but at second tier down here in Asia, and was able to fulfill a lot of my sponsorship commitments and then transition into work quite comfortably, and I enjoyed it. I actually thrive on the workload, and it all went from there. So that was 4 years ago, and it's been an enjoyable process.
It's funny. To me, it's almost like a Back to the Future thing, because you were working as an accountant, and at that point, realizing there was something bigger for you, and you left that cushy job with the view of the Opera House and the harbor, and went to become a professional triathlete. And at that point, that was a very risky move. But here you are, all these years later, sort of getting back into the whole business side. That part of it that intrigues me. That here now you're back being the financial guy again.
Yeah, without question. I think when you're younger, you're driven by different things. I think when I was working in the workforce as a 22-year-old, I had aspirations of bigger and better things. I thought I could conquer the world. But I think time catches up with everybody, and you have to be realistic. The guys like Jan Frodeno and these guys were coming, and they were coming rapidly. I was aging out, and I looked at, I always sort of semi-ran my own career. I worked very close with my agent, Scott Fairchild. We never went and got the IMGs or those big agencies to represent us. And I was always involved in that deal-making process on my side. I always liked to be on top of the pulse with everything. And I think that transition across was easier in that sense, because I've always felt my And I took some really good advice, actually, once from a friend of yours, actually. And they said to me, your net worth is your net worth. And I remember being told that very, very young by the guys at, what's his name, that runs Qualcomm.
Oh, Jeff Jacobs.
Jeff Jacobs, yes. We're actually writing the Million Dollar Challenge for the Challenged Athletes Foundation.
Yes.
And we're chatting away, and he said, Chris, if I can give you any advice, your network is your net worth. And I was like, oh, and it really stuck with me. So, I started looking at the people I'd met through sport, and you know, yeah, there's some amazing people that come to triathlon. It's incredible, and they're in positions of that can really help you on your way if you have something to offer. They're not just going to give you things. And I think as professional athletes, we have a tendency to believe that everything comes to us on a silver platter, but everyone needs sponsors, everybody needs to give us money, and it doesn't work that way in the real world, I guess. And, you know, I started applying a lot of that, my networks together, and it ultimately brought me to Asia, made my father very, very happy. He was not overly excited about me being a youngster and becoming a professional athlete, but now I think he realizes what triathlon has given me in a sports perspective, but more so what triathlon has given me in a broader base with the amount of people I've met around the world and the influence they have in certain areas.
What, so you go from what you, when I visited out there in Laguna Phuket and saw the facility, and it was, yes, you know, the dream was we're going to have an international school, because I don't think we had that at that. Actually, the international school was there, but the sports facility was, it's become an Olympic training center. At that point, yes, that was a dream that eventually we're going to bring in teams from all over the world, all over Asia specifically, to train here on their way to competitions or in the off season or the build season. And the facility has become that, right? It is a location, yeah, for teams to come and train.
It's amazing. When we first came here, it was a shell. It was an idea. And there was a local school in place. And Klaus, the founder, was driven to do something bigger for the community and bring an international school. We had a British international school on the southern end of the island. And for some reason, he believed I could help him deliver that. I didn't know whether I was flattered or scared, but I took him up on the challenge. And my first focus was to drive big sporting teams here. So we focused predominantly on aquatics, and we had, prior to the Rio Olympics, every single international swim team from this part of the world, all the Europeans, the Dutch, the Australians, all trained out of our centre. It was incredible. And then there was the pursuit of finding the perfect international school fit for us. And we've literally last year in the United World College, which is in the international school group, like Nelson Mandela used to be,
yeah,
chairman of United World College, is now the Queen of Jordan, came and opened our school. It's the gold standard of international schools. So first UWC in Thailand, the 14th United World College in the world. It's been an amazing, amazing journey with these guys. And, you know, you learn a lot very, very quickly. And I think if I've, you know, I try and talk about this, you know, with my triathlon friends, I think as triathletes, our work ethic is what makes us very, very good. I tend to argue that it's very, very difficult to be a talented triathlete because it's hard to be talented at swimming, biking, and running. We may have a big engine, but it's work ethic that gets results in triathlon, which is why it's such a cool sport. And I think when you apply that work ethic in the corporate world, you get those same sort of results. So I feel, despite making lots of mistakes on the way with Tanyapura and UWC, I think I just could get up every single day and go to the office, and the days a week was the pace I could set was very, very good. And it was great. It was an amazing learning curve, and it's an amazing organization now. We're doing another resort there at the moment. We're extending the track. There's big extensions happening. It's incredible what we've done. Really, really incredible.
What the other side of this is, you've always been a big picture guy, and you've always been one of those guys who looks at the pros, and you could see, okay, this guy is really represents himself well. This guy is sort of mailing it in. But at the end of the day, we do work really hard, and we're not really getting the support we need. And then you work with Bahrain to create this, yes, amazing program for the professional athletes that takes them to a level. I mean, we've had Tried Dubai, we've had a number of different programs over the years, but I've always felt those programs were ego type of programs. Someone, you know, hey, I'm going to sponsor some athletes, and then they looked at their books a few years later and said, I'm not really getting any. Where's my ROI on this? Where's my return? We're sponsoring these athletes, and are we getting anything in return? When you guys started the Bahrain team, I'm sure as a finance guy, you had to think about how is this going to benefit the folks in Bahrain? Well, take me through the process of creating that team.
Oh, without question. I think I had the opportunity of meeting Sheikh Nasser bin Hamad Al Khalifa, the future ruler of Bahrain, at a triathlon. And we talked openly. I was quite enthralled that a royal,
right,
and he is a royal, was doing triathlons. And we got talking, and he spoke quite openly and passionately about being a future leader and leading by example within his country. He has, you know, this part of the world has the biggest issue of diabetes on the planet. Obesity, mm-hmm, is a massive problem, and they're just not doing anything, he said, and nobody's doing anything about it. And he figured if he wanted to make change, he should be a person that actually leads by example. And so he started running marathons and engaged in the entire running community there. And then he found Ironman and was like, it changed his life. And in that discussion, he was talking about building a similar training center as Penyapura that we'd built here in Thailand. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, you know, having ambassadors, like the key individuals within triathlon and driving attention to his cause within Bahrain. And for them, it wasn't about a return on investment. For them, for Sheikh Nasser, it was about an ideology that he really wanted to live by. And he was doing it in his horse riding, he was doing it with his marathon running, and he was doing it by competing in Ironmans. And so when we talked about launching the Bahrain endurance team, and he said, let's do it. And I wanted key people from all over the world. And that was, you know, when we're building the team, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, Mac, I picked his friends. I was like, you know, we needed Europeans. We needed people that were racing in America, because he was driven by a cause that was, okay, I want to send a message for people to understand what Bahrain is, where we are, and to tell his message of why he does these things. He's very motivated in Kona. He's a triathlete. He loves the sport. And he believes that endurance racing, you know, he could buy a football team, he could buy all these other sports, but he believes investing in endurance sports because they're sports that you have to compete in. If you buy a soccer team, he encourages these people to sit down and watch a soccer match. But he's like, if I have triathlon teams and I bring triathlons and marathons to Bahrain, it encourages my people to participate. And participation is everything. You know, I need sports where you participate in, so I'm going to invest in sports where participation is the key element of the sport itself. And that was the launch of the Bahrain Endurance Team. And it came with a lot of people like, oh, you can't do that, this is ridiculous, Bahrain has these issues, and what's he thinking? And
sure.
But at the end of the day, I was like, come on, guys, he's a gentleman who's a future leader who wants to bring true change, who's been captured by our sport, who believes our sport and our sporting heroes within our sport, the great champions, have true merit and have influence over people. And he was right. You know, the sport has grown 5,000% in his country. Bike riding is, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 bike riders in Bahrain. 4 years ago, there was 5. It's incredible, the change. And people don't see that change. And it's 100% been because of himself and the team we put together 2.5 years ago, and we'll be continually doing for the next, for eternity, I guess, and guys like Ben Hoffman, who just won on Africa today, and Daniela Reef, they are household names in Bahrain. They are famous people within that country, and that's been the vision of His Highness, and it's been wonderful to be a part of. And you know, I think sometimes when we're on different continents around the world, you don't realise how small these communities are and how big our sport can be, because we just take it for granted. And then triathlon has single-handedly made monumental changes in that country.
Well, and
it's been amazing.
Yeah. Now, when you knew when you met the Sheikh, that obviously there was some issues there, right? That he had that there were some charges against him. And so when you're dealing with, okay, this can be a huge movement in this country, and not just in Bahrain, but in Dubai, the sport, I saw it in Abu Dhabi. I saw, you know, people racing on the Formula One track, and just the numbers of people, not just on race day, but they were going out to that track and they were using the track to ride and run. And like you said, obesity is a big issue there.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that when you know, okay, I'm going to catch some crap here because the reality is there's some human rights things that are out there that are charges. How do you move past that and basically, you know, basically accept that there's baggage, but in my mind, there's something beyond that?
I'll be honest with you, I didn't know until it all came out.
Really?
I really didn't look that deeply into it all. It was more, it's like meeting someone at a triathlon. It's like when I met Kevin Plank from Under Armour. I didn't know who he was until we really spoke more deeply about it. And it was the same with His Highness. I knew the region. I'd been in Dubai many times before, and I'd been in Abu Dhabi, and I knew the region. I've always thought region had issues. I didn't understand the political issues of the different states. I know it a lot better now. I didn't know anything about the Arab Spring of 2011. I knew none of that. It was more a meeting of the minds. We were talking about the sport of triathlon, and we were talking about health and wellness and communication.
Sure.
And I said, yeah, that sounds great. I'd love to help and love to be a part of it. And it wasn't until we started... And speaking to a lot of the athletes and the people in the sport, and there was a challenge race going on in there, and there was going to be an Ironman team. And I felt quite offended that we copped the brunt of it.
Right.
You know, and I remember thinking, wow, you know, it was like, oh, how can you do this? And I was like, guys, I don't know enough about the... I'm a triathlete. This is a triathlon team. This is a completely different division. We could have the same discussions about the U.S., you know? Like, it's one of those difficult things. I'm like, man, I'm just a triathlon guy. And I was quite shocked with the flak. It took me by surprise. I wasn't prepared for it, and we didn't even have to answer it. But we just said, look, we just swim, bike, and run, and this is what we're doing. And yeah, so it was a difficult time, but I think we all marched through it. It was awkward at the beginning, but, some of the athletes were like, couldn't deal with it, and most of them dealt with it quite comfortably. And now you understand more about the Arab Spring of 2011. It was what it was. It's a difficult time within the entire Arabian region, and it can happen again at any time, I guess. It's just the history of that part of the world.
Right. Well, so and as a younger athlete, you had raced in some of the International Triathlon Grand Prix, some of those multiple, where you do a swim, bike, run, almost exhibition-style triathlon. We had one here in Oceanside, the Tri-Prix type of thing. And that fast, spectator-friendly racing, I know from our conversations years ago, you always felt that there was a place for that. You know, sort of a standalone, made for TV, and was that the genesis of Super League?
Well, I'll be honest, the genesis of Super League came about really, and I think when you move away from the sport as a triathlete, from the professional level, you get out of the bubble a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was in the bubble. I think anybody who's a pro right now is in the bubble. You are the most important person in the world. The only thing that matters is triathlon, and everything's a fight and an argument. And then I started the Bahrain team, and I started negotiating these deals with the athletes. And I'll be truly honest, what I thought everybody was getting paid and what they were getting paid, there was a disconnect. And I realized, geez, I did quite well out of the sport. And I thought everybody did well, to be honest with you. And then in those negotiations with the athletes and all time with other athletes, and not it being so much about me, but more about them, you know, because now I'm running a team and I want them to win. It was a nice feeling. Come on, Benny Hoffman, or come on, Jan Frodeno. And you start sitting back and you get a little bit disappointed by the ROI in the sport and the return on investment. I'm like, wow, we could do so much more with this sport. I started to get the feeling that, you know, there's only a few people that really believe in triathlon. There's sort of people that just exist on the peripherals of it because it's a business for now, but there's no one really focused on growing this at a professional level. And I'd sit there with the pros and when you're talking about unions, and I'm like, guys, it's never going to work. We've had this conversation for an eternity. You need to go back to the basics and look at the business model of triathlon for a professional, not on the participation level. I was talking predominantly for the professionals. I said, look, if I'm a sponsor, and right now I am a sponsor with Tanyapura, with certain athletes, I'm a sponsor with Bahrain, I don't get a return on my money here. Why would I give you all this money? I don't get any media exposure. Even if you're at a big race, really, there's 3,000 people that watch you. It's participation-wise. You're not the New York Marathon. And I said, to be quite honest, it's not really that sexy. I said, and so we started, my friend Michael, we started going through, and I was talking about the old days of the short course Formula One racing, which is made for TV.
Right.
And so by chance, I knew a guy at Fox Sports here in Asia, and we went and, on our own dime, went and sat with him. I said, why don't you put more triathlon on television? And he said, mate, it's predictable.
It is,
the
yeah.
Television now is changing, and yeah, triathlon's predictable. And to be quite honest with you, Chris, it's boring.
Right, yeah.
And then we talked about that for a while, and I said, well, what if you mixed up the formats? You go, well, can you do that? And I said, well, yeah. And that was sort of how it came about. And we started talking to the professionals, and it was, so it was sort of a big think tank discussion. And we realized that Ironman does an amazing job at participation and encouraging, you know, people to come and do long, challenging events.
Uh-huh.
But it's really focused on that 40-year-old individual, and that's the average age now in Ironman, who wants to find fitness. The ITU does an incredible job of bringing people to the Olympics. But there's nothing in the middle, and there's no frameworks for professional league, and so we sort of drew up a business case and spoke to the key powers in the sport, or key powers who we thought, Vision Networks, sponsors and hosting venues, and we went and raised capital. And when I started speaking to the triathletes about it, of course everything comes with cynicism. And we're like, ah, here's Macca going off again and thinking he's going to change the world.
Right. Yeah.
But I honestly really wanted to, and yeah, we about 4 months ago we ventured down the path and raised the capital, and boom, we launched a Super League concept, which was a copy of the old, to some degree, a copy of a lot of the older racing we'd done in the 90s. But I think it's a new era, and with the new forms of media and social media, you can do so much more in making the athlete the star, and that was what was key. I wanted to make sure I could touch a young kid in the sense of they're watching this event and go, that's cool. I want to be a triathlete. And Ironman, I don't think, does that to the youth. And ITU is not enough media for it to do it to the youth. So I think Super League can be the catalyst that grows our sport at a youth level. And Ironman will always be the catalyst that grows that sport at the older level. And it's a perfect medium to grow triathlon.
When you look at our sport, one of the issues is, like when you talk to your person from Fox, Ironman learned years ago from a television perspective, what moves the needle is something the person at home can relate to. Here's Dick and Rick Hoyt, what would a father do for a son? That resonated way more than even Dave Scott winning the race. And that's why people were watching, for the human interest stories, for things that would change their lives. And at the same time, when you're trying to do, you know, live television or even live web, there has to be, you know, a mass of people who are these athletes? Why am I watching them? What are they racing for? The dollars have to be important. All those elements. And so now, it was one thing not to say that anything you did as a, you know, in Laguna Phuket was easy. But I don't think there's anything tougher than the world than being a race director with all the, you know, the herding the cats with the athletes, the sponsors, the television. Will this resonate? And at the same time, the triathlon model that works is, you know, I go to the race yesterday and there's 3,400 people paying an entry fee to be there.
Yep.
And then you've got sponsors who are paying because of those 3,400 people, and the pros are great, but that's not what moves the needle for the sponsors. Now, you're putting on your Super League, and you've got some of the greatest athletes on the planet, but you don't have that 3,000-person event that the sponsors are used to buying. How tough was that to sell when you're saying, well, there really isn't, at this point, an age group race to go along with this?
That was enormously difficult because, and I had this discussion, you know, there was a lot of discussion about no women's race at the first event.
Right.
When we sat down with the TV guys,
yep.
They don't know who Alistair Brownlee is. They don't know who Jan Frodeno is. They don't know anybody's name. Triathlon is an ink spot of a sport.
Exactly.
And we were sitting there going, okay, look, what we're trying to create is a sports entertainment piece. The things you're looking for in sport is non-predictability, characters, it needs to fit into a window of time that works on your networks, and quite unique. So we started the Super League thing, and we said, look, we want to put the athletes first. But I have, all I can say is I have the Olympic champion, the Olympic silver medalist. Well, those titles mean something, and this is why we did start with the men to some degree, because our Olympic champions that we wanted to put on the television weren't ready in the women's side.
Right.
And because we didn't have this age group participation, which most cities are looking for, to, because that's the economic impact of an event. I'll give you money because you're bringing 3,500 people to a city.
Yes.
We had to rely on the sponsor base, and we had to rely on our TV exposure. So I had to go to Hamilton Island and say, look, I'm going to guarantee you 5.5 hours of live television globally distributed. I'm going to guarantee you a 48-minute TV piece. I'm going to guarantee you the participation of the Olympic champion, the world champions, the best of breed in the sport. And it's going to be cool, right? And I'm going to give you the branding on the athlete uniform. That was an easy sell, easier, because they measured it. They just go through their algorithm and go, okay, 5.5 hours, 355 million people that can actually watch that, I'll give you that much money. So it was a relatively easy sell. Triathlon's never come at it from the TV space.
No,
And I realize it's a nice space to come at it from, but you have to be able to guarantee that TV, and that's an expensive spend. And for us, it was a proof of concept, and we were worried that a lot of the people in the sport of triathlon were going to say, well, this is a triathlon, and triathlon, swim, bike, and run, but we really had to be disruptive in the space, and we took a lot of solace out of two sports. Being Australian cricket, cricket is, you know, the sport within Australia, and years ago, it was test match cricket. It went for 5 days. It was horrific. And my grandmother grew up on it, and my father grew up on it. And I remember coming home, and my mother and grandmother would have the cricket on, the test match cricket.
Yeah.
And then a man called Kerry Packer came along, and he started one-day cricket, revolutionized the game in the 80s. And there's some great documentaries on him. And he made cricket players within Australia and India and the UK, everywhere, very wealthy, because he bought it to television, and he made it one-day cricket. Now, one-day cricket is still 50 overs, which is 300 cricket balls bowled. It's still relatively boring in today's terms.
Right.
The Indians came along literally 3 years ago and started 2020 cricket, which is basically 2.5 hours of cricket. It's changed the game, revolutionized the game. It's the fastest growing sport on the planet, like on sponsorship money. Like every single sport in the world should be modeling off cricket. And single-handedly, if you look at the 120 years of history of cricket in Britain, they've got county cricket clubs in Britain. And literally this year, all those county cricket clubs are saying, look, cricket's dead, we have to go to this 2020. So these disruptors out of India 3 years ago realised that the sport is cool, but it needs to be done a different way, because we think differently, we have less time. And that was what we thought with Super League. We need to do the same and shorten it, make it tighter. If it wants to be a TV piece and bring more interaction between the viewer at home and the people racing. So we want to bring in things where viewer choices can save athletes who are eliminated. All these things that make the sport relatively cool and a sports entertainment piece. Because then the athletes are athletes in their own right. They'll showcase their athletic ability. But you need to give them a platform to be stars. And then they'll go on and win the Olympics, and they're going to win Hawaii. We need the people to know who those people are that are winning the Olympics and winning their lives before they get there. And that's what we're hoping Super League will deliver. And that's what I want to see, because I still recall vividly, and I've told you a million times a day, sitting at my house and I watched Dave Scott and Mark Allen race.
Yes.
And the influence that race had on me, that one race. And I keep thinking, like, if we can do that to other kids in the sport of triathlon, then triathlon will survive.
So when you talk about TV, the world is different parts of the world are different the way that's handled. I know for years, if you wanted to put triathlon on TV in the States, you went to ESPN and you did a time buy. You know, I'll buy X amount, I'll buy a half hour, it'll air at 3 a.m. on Sundays, and, you know, you paid for that TV. In Europe, so you found Fox was willing to ante up because you were guaranteeing them numbers.
We're guaranteeing them the superstars.
Yes.
They were quite intrigued by the format.
Yep.
And they were quite intrigued about the non-predictability option. And their exact words to me was, I can tell you straight away who's going to win. I get my guys world championships for ITU this year, and who's probably going to win the Ironman. And that, to me, doesn't make good TV. We're struggling with Formula One right now because it's having the same predictability.
Right.
And people are tuning out. So if you can guarantee me non-predictability, I'll give you the shot. And we went through the whole thing. Well, this is what could happen here. And wow, and this could happen. And we're going to finish this race with a swim. It happened before, and this has never. And they were like, okay, I'll give it to you. And it was it worked. So they've come back to us saying, we want to buy it now. We want it. And it was, yeah, it was pretty cool because we threw it all out there. I just believe in triathlon, Bob. I just think it's a cool sport.
Yeah. Well, we're the same that way.
Yeah. And I was sitting there. I've been so stressed. I'm like, far out. I've got a lot rolling on this, and it worked. It was the most triathlon in history.
Yeah. So talk about the weekend itself, because you had, was it 3 days of racing?
Yes, 3 days of racing. The way we've sort of got these five or six formats we're looking at offering in cities, and we're still a. It's a core group of us, a really nice group, a good working group. We're working out of Singapore, and so we created these five formats with a 6-1 option. And we were originally going to put these in five different cities. And we realised on the journey, we need to get proof of concept here because it was difficult sitting in Singapore and saying, oh, we've got this triathlon product, and you sort of do this, but you don't do this. And no one could understand it. So that's when we picked Hamilton Island, and we figured we'd showcase three of those formats on the island, because the amount of time the island gave us to close down their roads enabled us to just do three formats. And what we've realised in the takeaway from that race was that actually having back-to-back racing day after day worked.
Right.
What you actually saw in Hamilton Island, we were originally thinking, was on day one we had a format called the Triple Mix, which was three separate races, always 300-metre swim, 6-kilometre bike ride, 2-kilometre run. But in the Triple Mix, you do swim, bike, run, 300, 6, 2, 10 minutes rest, and the winner crosses the line, then you reverse it, run, bike, swim, 10 minutes rest, and then a bike, swim, run, and accumulated points wins the day. Now, that was considered one format, and we were thinking, oh, maybe Singapore would take that single format for men's and single format for women. But then the next day, we put another race on called the Equalizer. Equalizer was designed to cull the argument of who's the best bike rider. So they do a time trial in the morning, individual time trial. The bike rider can post a super big time. And then in the afternoon, they start in a pursuit-style format where the fastest time in the time trial goes first, and whatever your deficit is, you go behind. And that format in the afternoon was swim, run, swim, bike, run. And we brought in a live elimination within that if you were the 60-second clock, if you're more than 60 seconds a certain part of that race, you're eliminated. And that really worked really well. And that was supposed to be another format, which we'd probably offer to another city. And day three was the eliminator, which was always swim, bike, run. The bottom 10 were eliminated. Then 10 minutes rest, you did it again. The bottom 10 were eliminated to leave 10 in the final with the winner of that race winning. So those three races, the way we saw it, would be three separate races in three different cities. But what Fox and everybody said to us after was, wow, that 3 days of racing, that stage race, that was spectacular. The fatigue and the storyline.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, wow. You know, we never even pictured it being in multiple days of racing for the pros. But the takeaway for us is multiple days of racing works.
Yes.
The way you need to cut it is very, very important. The TV quality is important. The athletes are important. And that was what you saw in Hamilton Island. I think we were very, very lucky with the way it turned out and the type of racing. The course was tough. And all these things we brought into play that were critical for us at future venues is course design, what we expect from certain courses, the spectators, what they should be able to see. You should be able to see the entire race from one spot. The actual racing on a day doesn't last more than an hour. So all these little things, it's all the peripherals around it that are important to the city. So it worked really well. Like, we don't claim to have all the answers. It was a proof of concept, and we're like, wow, it was successful. And now everyone's like, oh, well, I understand it. And I'm hoping that the future for the professionals can exist within this space if we can really get the sustainability in it.
So there's you have a lot of stakeholders, right? You've got your sponsors, you've got television, the athletes, the home base, Hamilton Island in this case. The takeaway for them was everybody happy with, and then everybody knew going in, this is an exhibition, we're sort of trying it out, we're seeing what formula works. Was a takeaway for every, from the island, hey, this was great, we filled up some hotels, we got a ton of exposure. What was a takeaway for your different stakeholders?
Yeah, the takeaway for the island, Hamilton Island, was they were blown away. It was their best ROI spend because it was relatively inexpensive for them. They spent in sailing, in golf, and they were like, wow. You know, they were very, very happy.
Right.
We just wanted to make sure we controlled a lot of the, you know, the one thing with Super League, which makes us unique, was we copied the model of UFC in the sense that we own everything. I mean, we own the athlete uniforms, we own the media, we own the media production, we own all the content, we own the event, we own the lot. And that way, when a sponsor comes in the future, say a Gatorade,
right,
they sponsor the series. We can then, through the series, we pay the athletes, and the athletes will be well paid. And in the same way, when you watch UFC, Conor McGregor, he fights in Reebok. But the series is sponsored by Reebok. Conor McGregor isn't. And that's where we'd like to get to, and we'd like to bring up to a point that in that series, within our series, that our athletes are racing for $1 million. A Super League contract is worth something of value. The TV networks were blown away. IMG and these companies have come to us now and said, wow, okay, how do we get involved in this level? And we're like, oh, okay, let us get our breath and work through what we're doing here. And I think the takeaway for triathlon, because I think there's been an underlying agreement in the world that triathlon is a sport, it's the fastest growing, that there's something there. But how do we showcase it? How do I touch those triathletes to do it? Because I can't put an Ironman on telly. I can put an Ironman down to a one-hour package and put it on every now and then. But you cut so much of the racing out, and it's not very dynamic and it's predictable. And they liked what they saw. And in fact, the guys at Eurosport on the phone to last week, they said, look, we saw this change in a sport called winter biathlon 10 years ago. Winter biathlon is the one where they ski and they shoot.
Shoot, right.
But 10 years ago. Yeah, 10 years ago, the sport was dead. He said two old winter biathletes actually from Estonia came and relaunched it exactly the way you've done. They brought it to stadiums. They changed the formats. There was complete uproar within the sport. Said, no, this is not winter biathlon. They made it come through cities and villages and people could watch it. It's now the second highest watched sport in Europe in winter behind football.
Wow.
It's gone up 15,000% increase in sponsorship in 10 years. And they said they got it. They got it. The old one of going out in the forest and coming back. And it just didn't work. Yeah, and so that's what the US ball guy said. This is fantastic. So I was like, oh, wow. Okay, so we've had a lot. The feedback's been very, very positive. But as I try and talk to other people, because I know there was a lot of discussion about the women and why we didn't do this and why we didn't do that, I'm like, it's sort of like a false economy. When you're using your own money and investors' money, it's
yes.
Everything looks fantastic, because if it's losing money, you just fill it with investors' money. So I'm like, guys, it's a false economy here. I need this to be sustainable. So the takeaway is that, yes, we believe there's a sustainability there, but we need to be very, very delicate in its growth. And that's what I've said to everybody, saying, hey, guys, instead of throwing rocks at it, help me. Like, I don't claim to know everything. I'm happy to take help, but I'm just here to make triathlon work. Like, I would love to see it be super successful. And so, yeah, it's been pretty cool.
It goes under the heading of no good deed goes unpunished. You know, and that's really sort of the case, because you're investing in putting something on, not saying this is what it's going to look like 5 years from now. We're saying, God, this is new. We're creating something new. And the goal is, and we talked about this, just that you're going to do a men's race and then do a women's race. But mm-hmm. the key is just knowing that you got to put something on the map. You got to get response. And I always look at anytime people responding, positive or negative, that's okay. They're coming from a place of passion, right? They're coming from a place of passion, and they can be angry. If they were vanilla and didn't respond at all, if people weren't watching it, then you have a loser. But the fact that people are saying, we want this for us, That's a positive because you could provide that. Right? That's an easy fix.
That's always
an easy fix when you got passion. So what are the plans moving forward now that you've had your download from all the stakeholders, you know it worked, what didn't work, what do you go next?
Well, we wanted to make sure, and you know, I've reached out to the ITU again, and we don't want to, like, I want to make sure we position a series that works within the current framework of triathlon. So we've said November to, or end of October to March,
right,
to be our racing season. You know, I want to make sure we have the Olympic champion. So I've said to Marisol and ITU, hey, let's work together. I would love to be able to say to the alternative ITU, look, maybe in the future contracts to the Super League, if you win Hawaii, you get a contract. If you win the ITU watching, you get a contract.
Yep.
You know, we want to be the Super League, right? And
right.
And work together. In that sense, we're in that ink on paper with some key cities in predominantly Asia because of that time of the year. And initially, we're taking the top 25 men, top 25 women. And that's the championship level, the Super League championship. We would like to make a relegation up and down where the top 15, 10 or 15 each year retain a contract. That contract will be totally transparent, so everybody knows the number one in the Super League gets a $250,000 contract the following year. It's not
right
at that level, but that's, we want it to be transparent so that everybody knows what they're racing for contractually. And prize money is always set at this level. We've told the athletes, and that's part of their contract, that 15% of all profits are donated to the Athletes Association as part of the Super League. And that Athletes Association will be spearheaded by whoever they want. It sits on the table with us, and they donate that money to wherever they want, whether they want more prize money, whether they want to fly business class, whether they want to put more money in the qualification league. But I wanted to give the athletes a seat at the table. Right? I didn't want to call it a union because it's not a union.
No.
Association, yes, the Super League athlete to sit in this association. And like American sports have with the athletes' associations, maybe in the future, there's something now. Maybe I'm an idealist, I don't know, but I wanted to make sure that framework was established. And then obviously we want to build a qualification league where future athletes can get into this league. And that can happen during the season. So maybe there's a couple of races in the States, and we're talking in Canada at the moment, we're talking in Boston, we're talking a lot in Mexico and Latin America, and a lot in Europe. And show a league. But for me, especially in Asia, we've got a big focus rolling out a youth league because I just feel like the kids have got been bumped here. There's just nowhere for them to go. And a lot of kids I've seen working when I was at Tanyapura, there's 500-600 kids here who consider themselves competitive, I guess. I guess if you're a swimmer, you can go and do a swim meet, right?
Sure.
Triathlon doesn't have that. You've got the iron kids, but it's
Now that that's more of it's a demonstration thing, yeah.
Exactly, and there's not really a framework for kids to race. They have their club races, but there's not really inter-club stuff happening. And I'm hoping we can build something like that on the youth level, and provide that, which is provide a nice youth league. And then that third tier will be age group participation. But for us, age group participation, we want it to be, because I'm a big believer now. When I look at my wife. Back when I was in the 90s, I think people used to identify themselves as, you know, I'm a triathlete, I'm a marathon runner, I'm a tennis player. Everyone sort of identified themselves as something. But when I speak to my wife and her younger friends, and that's not cool anymore. They see themselves as athletes. They're going to do Spartan. They do a run.
Exactly.
They do a triathlon. They're not specific anymore, right? And I think that's important in the psyche of people today. But if you try and box them and you're too square and you say, this is triathlon and it's only triathlon, you're going to kill off a lot of people. So we're trying to bring out this 626 racing series, sort of like what you did with the Rock and Roll Marathon, and make it very, 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 very fun and engaging. It takes a little bit of a Sunday morning. It's open and easy for everyone to access. The swims are not so thin. You can draft on the bike. And it's fun. Right, and basically what we hope to build around the Super League is that the pillar of entertainment sits around the professionals, and the participation is done in a fun way. There's fun runs, there's easy triathlons to do, and there's a competitive element for the youth. And if you wanted to get competitive on the age group side, we offer that, but it's not the key thing of what we're doing on a weekday. And that's sort of where we're building towards. And for us, we're finding the cities in this part of the world are happy to engage us because we're less disruptive to a city. So because we're such smaller events, I could bring it closer to the city centre, unlike an Ironman or something, which you're
right.
tending to move further away from city centres. And we can be that triathlon tick for a city. There it is. And we've got the triathlon, the Super League race in Singapore or Hong Kong, and there's a mass participation element, which is around a distance that is attractive for everyone to come in and do.
You know, it's so funny about that when you say that. When I was created Competitor Magazine, the purpose was, hey, if you subscribe to Runner's World, you're a runner. You subscribe to Triathlete, you're a triathlete. You subscribe to Velo News, you're a cyclist. But in this day and age, the average person, and this is what we tried to do, the average person might do a 5K one weekend, the next weekend do a short triathlon, the mm-hmm. following weekend do a Spartan, and then a Grand Fondo the week after that. And that would not be out of line. And then be working out the gym at the same time. And you remember back in the day, if you worked out in the gym, you didn't do anything with endurance. You lifted weights, that was
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Now there's a graying of the whole, what I call the endurance marketplace, and everybody is doing everything. So it's important.
Exactly.
If something is fun to watch on television and incorporates something I do, I ride, I run, I swim, you're going to watch it because it's entertaining.
Yeah.
And then if you learn names of those athletes, then down the line, everybody wins because you're building stars, and then there's more reason for people to tune in.
Absolutely agree. I saw it here this weekend. My wife went and did an Xterra.
Right.
It was an Xterra race.
Yeah.
So I'll go and do the Xterra. Like, that would never, like, I was blown away because it was easy entry. The entry was easy. You could go and do it. There was a smaller distance there. Do it with a friend. The rules were not so...
I know. Overwhelming.
Yes. They just want to do it, you know, and they had 550, which is not huge, but in Asia, it's quite a big little Xterra.
Yes.
And they had a ball. They were finished, went out of coffee, and then and their other girlfriend did the front, the trail run. I'm like, oh, this is exactly the format. This is exactly it. And if you ask my wife, are you a triathlete? No.
No, right.
Not at all.
Right.
You know?
Well, and that's to a certain degree, we've got this aging group of triathletes who've, you know, raced Ironman in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. They still swim, bike, and run every day. But we can't really include them in our numbers because they're not racing. So you've got millions
exactly.
of people. Well, Chris McCormick, you're not racing.
Yeah.
You got millions of people
who are
swimming, biking, and running. That's their lifestyle. That's what they do. But if you said, oh, when was the last triathlon you did? 97. You know, it's like, oh, because they don't need to get up at 5 in the morning to go to a race
exactly.
that starts at 7, where their wave doesn't go off till 9, and then they're not out of there till noon. It's like, okay, I don't need to do that.
Exactly.
You've got to make it come there, have some fun, and you're out of there, right? So,
exactly.
yeah, I think we're on
exactly.
the same page. So, So at this point, do you have a second one scheduled, or is that something for 2018?
No, we're looking at, we've got about 6 cities, but what we want to make sure we've got is the logistics worked out and the costing, because what we've discovered is each city, you know, what you put in one city costs very much, very different than another.
Absolutely.
So, you know, off the record, I won't give, yeah, we've got an event in Thailand, we've got an event in the Philippines, we've got an event in Singapore. We're speaking to a big venue in Mallorca.
Nice.
We have an event in the Middle East and Monaco will be an event. So that'll be in this realm. And what we're trying to do is make sure we work the athlete logistics out, speak with the athletes, make sure we speak with our girls and trying to work out whether we're better to skip the 2 Asian races, which are late this year and maybe start January of next year with, say, Singapore, which is when they want it up before Chinese New Year, and then run straight up, or go into Australia and run straight up and finish in Monaco. So it's, at the moment it's just a scheduling
right.
thing. And, you know, it's exciting, it's good. Like I said, I've never been on this side of the fence. I have a much bigger appreciation for it. And
it's brutal.
And I just think I'd like to, oh, it is. You got it right. You can never do anything right.
No. Yeah. And I'm sure, like, you were surprised with the backlash on the Sheik. I'm sure the backlash from the women was like, oh, my God, I'm just trying to put something out here. Just you guys need to be a little patient. We're going to have – because if you think about triathlon, we've from that 1979 race where Lynn LeMaire was the first woman to do Ironman – actually, you know, finished 5th and was leading the bike at one point. And our race directors in Kona were Valerie Silk and Sharon Ackles and Diana Birch. We have always been a equality-based sport, right? From the prize money, we've never been like cycling where they just had men, and you know the women's side of the Tour de France is really, really tiny. We've always been equality-based. And, you know, you're sort of overrun by girls at home, too. I can't imagine that that's not something that you're going to make sure that the women are taken care of.
Oh, great. And that was communicated from the beginning. We already had spoken to a lot of girls. I know we've spoken to you both with Katie. And we had a lot of – we had these discussions. And we signed LOIs with a lot of the girls. So it was a women's race. We'd always said, yes, we're doing. It was not whenever – you couldn't in this modern day, and I've said this to a couple of the pro girls I've spoken to in the last couple of weeks, and said, girls, every single pitch deck I've ever got out of, I've got Gwen Jorgensen on.
Right.
These are the 50 athletes that I'm bringing to Singapore.
Right.
Gwen Jorgensen, you know, like Daniela Reif.
Yes.
I couldn't sit in Singapore and say, look, I've got this men's thing. And they would just laugh you out of the room. Like, governments don't allow that, and you couldn't do it. I'm like, guys, we're always going to do a women's race. We just want to make sure I can get the proof of concept out, show the TV networks, which is critical in what we're doing, for them to grasp it and say, yes, we'll take it, okay, which they've done. Now show the sponsors what we can do for them, which is very, very different to everything else that's out there. And show the world that it has merit. And now, you know, I said to a lot of them, 4 weeks ago, you didn't even give a rat. None of these wanted to know it. So as you earlier, I'm flattered by the fact that there is uproar, because they must have been pretty good, because everyone's like, wow, I want a piece of that.
Exactly.
And that's great.
It is.
Let us build it, and we'll all have a piece, and I just would love to sit back and triathlon's cool. And my daughter, who's watched me my whole life, she went up there, she's got Richard Murray's autograph, Javier Garrett. She's doing triathlon at school now. She's taken up swimming. She's been swimming carnival. I'm like, damn, this works.
Your own daughter. She's like, yeah, Dad, go ride, run, and swim all day. I could care less what you do. Now she's into it.
Couldn't care. Exactly. And that's when I'm like, this is going to make it cool. And that's all we want to do. It needs to be cool. Athlete first, and it's done it for Sienna.
Love it.
I'm stoked by it.
So what was your biggest surprise coming out of Hamilton League, Hamilton from Super League?
Speaking to Alistair, it was quite interesting talking to him, because he got obliterated. and I said, mate, are you very fit? He's like, to be quite honest, Chris, I didn't expect to get so belted up. Usually I start the ITU season probably in the same condition I am now, but I can sort of hide a little bit. It's a little bit less anaerobic. You know, I can build into my fitness. I finish fifth, run a solid 10, and I win the first one, but by second or third World Cup, I'm winning again. He said, literally, I died in the first race here. My heart rate was 185. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, my God, I was hanging on for dear life. And he said, I crossed the line at the end of the first race. And like, 5 minutes till the next race, 5 minutes. He's like, oh, man, I couldn't hide. So he was a surprise. I was expecting him to do a lot better. And I think it's the first time, and I recall when we did it years ago with Welshy and Brad Bevan,
yep,
and Mark Stewart and Spencer Smith racing, and myself and Greg Bennett were young guys. And it was the first time I felt we had the power to keep up with these guys, because you don't have that on endurance base that they have, but you have the speed.
Right.
And it's the first time I've ever looked at Javier Gomez in a race when he had young Jacob Birtwistle and Ryan Fisher and Ryan Bailey. And he looked old, and I mean that with the utmost respect.
You're right.
I was like, wow, he's, you know, these guys are all over him. They're faster, they're more dynamic, they're quicker through transition, they're recovering between races a lot better. And that could also be the time of the year, without question, but he just won the Abu Dhabi ITU event.
Right.
Right. So he was the main man, and he got the wrong way.
So I love that.
It was interesting. It was quite interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of those stories, and I think that'll be the case on the women's side as well. You know, you're going to have Gwen coming back.
Yep.
Katie, who's just won in New Zealand,
probably Nicola.
Nicola, she's cannot wait.
Yeah.
She's probably of all the girls we have the most excited for this racing, because she was she can't wait to get involved. Danielle is a bit reluctant, but you're going to put all these big superstars in playing, but you're going to look at these younger ones that come and dislodge them. And I just hope there's some dynamic young star, you know, someone who has that charisma to lead it. Because we're, as we said to the guys in our pro briefing, mate, I've got more cameras here than you had at the Olympic Games per course. Mate, anything goes. If you're upset, tell the camera you're upset. We're going to stick microphones in your face. I want the world to know who you are, right? Everybody needs to know who you are. This is not sanitized. You know, if you peed off, tell me you peed off. And that's what I want to do with the entire, is show that passion and that competitiveness and understand who the athletes are. And I think the winner, Richard Murray, was brilliant at that. I think it's the first time people got to see who Richard is.
Right. It's true.
Which is great.
You know, when you made your career, besides being an amazing athlete, you made your career by saying what was on your mind, right? By being outspoken and taking a little cue from boxing and world wrestling. And we, I think as a sport, we need a little bit more of that. People love rivalries. People like it even in sports they don't know, which they don't know triathlon, they don't know running. But I know that as a media person who covers mainstream sports, they might not care about your sport, but when they have two people who want the same prize and don't like each other, Mark Allen, Dave Scott, Paul Newby Frazier, Aaron Baker, Chris McCormick, Norman Stadler, Chris McCormick, Ferris El-Sultan, Chris McCormick, Craig Alexander, you know, that type of stuff resonates because it goes beyond the sport and then the mainstream guys get involved. In your discussions with these guys, do you talk about that at all? Listen, I had a great career, but I could have just been an athlete, but I became more than just an athlete because of the way I presented myself.
I think a lot of them knew that. You know, I had Javier staying with me a fair bit, and a lot of the guys, and they sort of knew that rivalry. And now they know you; they see the other side. They realize that the rivalry, and they have it in their own way, but they just handle it differently. And I was like, look, it's the same that you have with Alistair, or we both wanted the same thing. I was just more vocal about it. And I realized that resonated with the press and media, and some people hated my guts and still hate my guts to it. They take it so personally, and others didn't. But I didn't care at the time because it put logos on my jersey, and that was what being a professional was to me. Right? And sometimes when it's all finished, I still bump into people like, you're a jerk. And I'm like, really? You believe all that stuff?
I tell you, from my perspective, I loved every. I still get people going, I was just watching that Macca down at University of at Auburn University talking about Crowe and how they're going to beat him. And I'm like, that's good stuff. You could have kept that internal, but look at the hundreds of thousands of views later and people still talking about that stuff. Now it's huge. Yeah. And I think you've got something really special here with Super League. I think it's going to be really fun.
And that's what we want to do. And we tried to push that out in all our Facebook Lives and all our, you know, in everything we did, even one of the dynamics together, because everything I'm thinking about is rivalries and trying, not manufacture them like WWE, but exaggerating them. So we did one thing. I know with the ITU, the athletes pick one soon start position. What I said, look, what we're going to implement is a live draw, and this is how the athletes pick their draw. So according to their race number, they walked up and there was a big, like a barrel, and they put their hand in and they pulled out an athlete's name. And so Javier Gomez walked straight up and he put his hand in and he pulled out a name. And had that been Alistair Brown, we could explain what the best point on the pontoon was to start and what the worst point. Now, in Super League racing, start positioning is everything. So we wanted, our dream was for Javier Gomez to pull Alistair Brown's name out and put in the worst spot on the pontoon.
I love it.
And they're the things we did. And actually, Alistair, being the arsey guy, he put his own name out and gave himself the best spot on the pontoon.
Of course.
And but others were pulling names out, and it was quite an interesting dynamic. And trying to create this friction, if you possibly can. And we're always pushing for that to get a better understanding of who likes who, because and who doesn't like it. And if we find it, we tap on it a lot. it'll be interesting.
Love it.
I'm enjoying it.
It's triathlon reality television. That's really good stuff. I love that. Hey, Mecca, thanks for taking so much time. I really always enjoy chatting with you. I think Super League is going to be very special. And I don't personally, I don't think sometimes the pros understand that you're one of the best advocates for them because you were a professional, because you felt that, gosh, you know, a lot of these guys are underpaid for what they're doing. But you've got to create value. You got to create worth beyond racing. And I think you're sort of giving them that with this venue just because the racing is fast and furious. And then hopefully you'll get some of that interaction and the rivalries that'll make the racing even more important. Love that.
Thanks, Bob.
Always a pleasure. Chris McCormick has been our guest. And it's Mecca, it's superleague.com. What's the best place for people to find out more?
Superleaguetriathlon.com. You can watch all the last three episodes, superleaguetriathlon.com. Super League Tri is our Instagram and Twitter. But it's we've got some pretty cool stuff on social media. But every single race we have in their entirety is on the website. And you can watch them all.
Love it. Chris McCormick has been our guest. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, Velofix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel of six-time Ironman champion Dave Scott, the IOA, Run the City 5K, the best ever office party, come to San Diego on Thursday night, June 15th. The Challenge Athletes Foundation, we're about to send out 2,000 grants totaling $3 million to buy the equipment challenged athletes need to stay in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com, on iTunes, and as always, endurance lives here.